Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I'm your host, Jay Williams, and joining me today is Jeff Clossy.
Good morning, Jay. How's it going, man?
It's going great.
Happy Thanksgiving week.
Happy Thanksgiving week. And the fall weather's here. I told you we'd pay for it. All those nice days.
Yeah, it's raining this morning, isn't it?
And the leaves. Man, I've spent several days trying to deal with all the leaves in our yard. And I looked out this morning and I was so sad by how many leaves there are still in my yard. Yeah. I don't understand. It's like I did everything that I could do and they just, it's like they come up from the ground.
Yeah, they do. I have had a similar experience at my house and I have just decided those leaves don't get the special treatment the other leaves got. And it's not because I don't like them as much as I like the other ones or the other leaves are more valuable. It's just that you are too late. So you're going to sit. Now you're going to sit and you might be covered with snow. And I might see you in April or May or
wait
June.
Wait a second. So you think in this world that you live in, you think the preferable thing for the leaf is to get raked up and...
To stay with all the other leaves, yep, in my yard. I mean, they don't... In my yard...
Thrown into the woods?
Yeah, my yard, they're just in the woods. So they're not going anywhere. They're not getting ground up or anything. But the ones on the ground, from my human perspective, are the ones that I would wish had fallen earlier. When they were supposed to.
I, these are ones that had already fallen. I just can't get them all. Mm. I go over, I raked, I mowed, I used, you know, the mower to like, you know, blow them out towards the edge of the yard. I mulched them.
I see. So they're not new. So mine are like, yeah, my oak trees are stubborn.
Oh,
so
no,
we did a huge, well, huge for my yard. Like I wish, I don't know if you weigh your leaves, but I thought that this year, that would be so fun if I had a way of weighing. Because I have maples, I have oaks, and a lot of them. And so there's so many leaves. It's just amazing. And we cleared them. I get on my roof. I clear them off my roof. I mean, it's a project. And the next weekend, I'm looking out, and I'm like, where did these come from? So that's what my experience. So okay. Yeah, mine were just late to the party.
No, I just...
Yours were just there, and they're just still
there. And they're stubborn, and then I think the thing is, you know, and living out kind of in the country, you don't worry about... And the leaves are good. Some leaves
are
good for the soil and everything. So, I'm not interested in getting every single leaf, you know, like a manicured little lawn. But you feel like you get most of them and then you walk out and it feels like you got none of them.
Yeah.
That's what I'm.
Yeah. It's like relative, right?
My yard looks brown.
Yeah.
From the leaves. And I'm so disappointing because I know how many leaves I moved off into the woods and it was so many leaves. But anyway,
it's so beautiful. I mean, I'm so thankful that they do what they do. I mean, even though they're work to get rid of, at least they're for the most part really pretty. And it's funny, yesterday I was down in Milwaukee for some things and the maple trees in downtown Milwaukee are so confused about what time of year it is. I feel for them. I saw multiple maples fully just this radiant yellow and they hadn't dropped like a leaf.
Really?
I could not believe it. I was like, oh my. Part of it is that we are a lot more north than them, but part of it I think is the urban setting and it's just different. But yeah, there were multiple trees where, you know, underneath the tree there's a few and then the whole thing is just lit up like our maples do here, but they did here a month and a half ago. Like it's been a while since there were maples leaves on our trees.
I don't even know why that would be happening.
I don't know. Someone send it in, research it.
And then they're gonna Well, all right. Well,
good to be with you, though, man.
It's good to be with you too, especially. Yeah. So yesterday, I spent all that time working, and then I rested by coming into the office and working.
Yeah, it's good.
It was one of those things where you have to
work and rest.
Well, because the daylight, I needed the daylight, you know. Mm-hmm. So
I looked last week. I don't know if anyone listening has done this, but you know, you can feel like I didn't know exactly how much daylight we had, but I could tell like it's just in myself. Yeah. Like we're not getting a lot of daylight all of a sudden. And I know it's been gradual, but you notice it. And when I looked last, we literally right now are getting about 9.5 hours of daylight between sun up and sunrise, or sunrise and sunset. And that's amazing. So you're right. If you need to get some work done, you got to do it at the right time. Otherwise,
you got to make hay while the sun shines.
Exactly.
That's what we always said in Iowa. You probably didn't say that.
No, I never said that.
Never in Nina.
No,
there wasn't a lot of making hay when the sun shines.
No, not as much.
Well, you got it.
I get what it means, though.
So that's what you do. Those are the rhythms. So yeah, work and then I finally rested when I got home from the office. I just went straight to bed.
That's good.
So I slept.
So you're all strengthened and ready to go?
Sure.
Good.
Yeah, up right back at it again. So
that's let's part talk of the dynamic.
It is.
So that's the rhythm where it, I think in our current state, we feel, I mean, there are exceptions in our lives, but I think there are seasons of life and then basically just the way life is now. And when I say that, I just mean the way normal life, if you don't do anything intentional, it just gets that way. I do think that we kind of feel like we never really have the rest rhythm that we need. And then I think some people probably vacillate the other direction too, where they're like, I'm not working as much as I should. But in conversation, that's not what you pick up on. That's partly a cultural phenomenon too, I think, the way we talk about things.
Because you have to talk about that. Yeah. That way. I mean, even if you could have the laziest week of your life, just for whatever reason, and if somebody asked you how your week was, you're not going to say that.
Yeah, and they're...
I've never once heard anybody say, I sat around and did nothing all week.
Right, and because they're all, that's like inactivity
right.
as well, and not often even in that moment, it's not rest, right? It's like distraction.
Well, for sure, but I'm just saying that culturally we have to, our identity is so much in...
Yeah, it feels
work and in busyness yep. that we, I mean, we talk about this a lot that if you ask anybody how they're doing, how their week has been, they will say busy. Mm-hmm. They might say good and busy, or they might say, it's been a full week or it's been busy, but busy will always be in the answer.
Yep.
I cannot think of the last time that I asked somebody and busy wasn't in the answer. Maybe not initially. Like someone might just say, I'm good, or it's been good. And yeah. But if you just give them a pause and you need something else in there, dollars to donuts, we're going to say busy because that's where we find kind of our value or our identity. And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about in that is, so why is that the case? So I want to talk about both work and rest and kind of just look at the reality of what we deal with and just kind of some questions that you posed and some thoughts you posed that I just want to dig deeper into. So this idea of why is that our identity? Like, why is our identity so closely tied to work? And is that all bad? Like, what is it? And this is kind of like we're talking about in creation. You kind of talked about this a little bit, but I think it'd be good to just kind of look at that. Because with everything, we talk about that our desires, anything that you want in life, there is some reason why you want that. There's a root to that, and it's how you're wired, but then it gets perverted. So when we think about that, you know, we either look at it as like, oh, good, yeah, work ethic and work, that should be your identity. That is who you are. Or we buck against that and we say, no, that shouldn't be, you know, work shouldn't be at all in your identity. What would you say to that? What is the...
Yeah, I would say, you know, yeah, either extreme is going to probably lead to some significant unhealth. I mean, here's the thing. If we want a life with meaning and purpose in it, work is going to be part of that. That's the way God made us. But if your work is the meaning of your life, then you've swung the other direction. And you've made meaning and purpose contingent on your success at whatever that is. And often we're not thinking work in the broader sense like we see in Genesis, that's not just your livelihood, you know, or your what you do to make money, but work as in like a call. So like if you take Jay, you and I have, we have work that in a lot of ways we have the advantage of people talk about it much more biblical than they talk about other work. Now, the expectations of it are often not calibrated to what our role is. But so people talk about being a pastor as a calling, right? It's a vocation. And that's accurate. It is. But so is being an electrician. And this is where I think we've got some wires crossed. Ooh, there. That was an accident.
I see what you did there.
Did that like in process. So what I mean by that is, so there is no way to know me right now in my current season of life without knowing me as a pastor, because that is my calling. If tomorrow I'm not a pastor at Faith Church, I will still be a pastor, because it's beyond like the thing that I do for my, you know, livelihood. For me, it's a bigger thing than that. But if that's the only way you can know me is by being like, I'm a pastor, that is my meaning. That is the meaning of my life. Then my work has become something bigger than God intended it for it to be. Because before I'm a pastor, I'm an image bearer. But, and then after that, I'm an adopted son of God. And after that, like, there's all these other parts of who I am that are much more foundational to who I am. But my work is an important part of that. So it's not that you just throw it out. Like, it doesn't bring meaning to your life. It's not part of why you're here. It is. It is. It's an important part of it. It's just that when it becomes the pinnacle or the ultimate, and then I think because of the way our world is, often that has to do with how much money you make. You know, it ends up getting really twisted really quickly, because if this person makes, you know, 500K and this person makes 50K, well, then that person who makes 500K must be a lot more important, you know? And that's where I think it really gets skewed quickly. So I guess my quick answer to the question you were asking originally, sorry, my mind went a lot of places, is that work is an important part of the meaning of your life, but is not like the ultimate. It's not.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, I think that's good. So talking about, so some of it is identity. So, and we do this when, you know, when you talk to somebody, you meet somebody, one of the first questions you ask is, what do you do?
Yeah.
And I've heard people, and I've gone through the phases where I'm like, oh, we shouldn't do that, because now we're feeding into that idea that this is your identity. However, I think the other side of that, though, is kind of what you brought out, is that in the garden, pre-fall, Adam and Eve would have been working 6 out of 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
Most of their days is spent, like most of their week is spent doing work. I mean, now within each day, I think we'll talk about that later, like rhythms of what a daily, weekly, yearly rhythms look like. But the work rest idea is that's what we know about Adam and Eve. They have this work to do, and then they would walk with God like in the cool of the day. So there would be this rest and this rejuvenation we see, but we also see this work. And so I think it's as much as we don't want to feed into the idea that you are a teacher, you are an electrician, like that's who you are. We don't want to do that. Like we are children of God. If we belong to Jesus, if we belong to his kingdom, then that's who we are. But you learn a lot about a person and how they're wired and what that means, who they are. We're not all stormtroopers who are identical. We all have different wirings, different gifts, different temperaments. And I find that, you know, often by finding out what does a person do for their work? Again, not all about livelihood. It's just, what do they give their time to working? So you learn a lot about a person. If they're a teacher, I always find people's jobs fascinating. Like, I just find it fascinating what they're doing and why, what they like about that, what they're wired, you know, and how they're wired to make something. I like, one of the things I think is fun is thinking about how other people's jobs would stress me out. How I just think, oh, I could not do that. And so then I just admire the fact that, oh, you're able to handle that. You're able to, you know, see this problem and fix it, or you're able to think about things in this way, or you're able to get thrown into this kind of situation. So I think that that's the tension that we feel, but there is a really beautiful redeemed thing to say, yes, but I am meant to work. Like, that's what we are created to do. It's why people get so depressed often in retirement. And so there's this thing of like when people retire and they say, well, I'm busier now than I was when I worked. And sometimes we think it's just these two ditches. Like there's the ditch that we fall into where you say, well, I don't have meaning. I don't have an identity unless I'm busy. And I think we should reject that. But also the idea that rest or retirement means or that the good life is I have no work. Like I don't have to do anything. And people who choose one of those ditches end up very depressed and very unfulfilled. Because if your life becomes about finding your identity in being busy, you're going to be, I mean, one, you're just going to be stressed and overrun and miserable. Because it'll never be enough. You'll never work enough to feel like you know, and it won't be valued enough or whatever. But also, if your purpose in life is to never work, and we see that right now, that's kind of the new American dream. The new American dream is you don't have to work a day in your life. Or we even said that about finding, you know, if you find a job that you love, you'll never work a day in your life. But think about what the goal is there. The goal is like, well, I don't want to work. And some of that is just our misunderstanding of what work is and in equating work with the fall. So saying that the things that come up in the fall are things that are inherent in work, but they're not. But also it's trying to find purpose and it's really purpose outside of God's intended creation. Like God's intended creation. If you ever seen the movie WALL-E and they all end up, you know, just sitting in their little chairs and hovering around, that's not what heaven is going to be. Like heaven is not going to be just everybody just sitting by, you know, a mountain stream and just, you know, kicking back all day, every day. We'll have work.
Yeah, I think part of the challenge with that assumption that basically work is bad is because of the nature of work today. You know, the abnormal struggle, the futility of it, that the reality is our work today is never complete. There's not like a sense of, even in the best circumstance, that we've ever really done it because of the brokenness of everything. Even when we can make progress on our work, like we use words like that, it's always like undone, right? Just because of the nature of the status of where we're at right now. But I didn't have time to unpack this, but Jay, I was thinking, so here's a little nugget that I think could be a fun thing to flesh out. So in the very beginning, it says that God gave human beings dominion, and we've been fleshing that out, and this work is part of that dominion, this cultivating, this care, this creativity. So in Genesis, the early Genesis, it's dominion, and then throughout the New Testament and then into Revelation, the word isn't dominion anymore, it's reign. And I think it's fascinating. I said like on Sunday that our work will continue on then into eternity. It's not just, you know, like the conception that you're highlighting there is basically this is something we have to put up with for a while. It's not a very good thing, and it would be so much better if we had just nothing to do and that life was essentially like leisure, like a beach, you know, the scene, whatever the scene is for you, might be the woods. But that's not what God made us for. And we will be working in eternity, and the word to look for, if you wanted to study this more, is reign. We'll reign with Christ, and we will continue to participate. The good news is we'll continue to participate with God in what he's doing, and he's not going to stop being beautiful and loving and expanding, you know, who he is and drawing us deeper into him. Anyways, I just noticed that in there and didn't have time to flesh that out for a sermon, but I think that's just a beautiful part of it. And it can be hopeful. You know, I know a lot of people are going to work today and their work environment is super harsh. It's not good. It's not as God intended. Either the work that it themselves, like what they're doing, is putting themselves in harm's way, or over time degrading their bodies because it's just bad, or the people they're around, it's like not life-giving. And that's the reality for so many today. And I think that's partly why it feels like really what God must have intended is a cabin on a lake, you know? And I think that's part of it, but again, in rhythm, right. And it's a cabin on a lake so that we can participate with him in the good that he's doing. Your example of retirement is a good one. I observe that, you know, and friends of mine that are retired now, it's interesting to watch how they make that transition and that adjustment, and then how they begin to give themselves away in beautiful ways. And sometimes it's in a way that they felt like they couldn't before, because their livelihood didn't give them the space to do it. And now they get to. So I've seen people beginning to, you know, they serve at a homeless shelter, or they become like a CASA volunteer, and they're just really giving themselves. And that's all work. You know, that's an important category of the good that God is accomplishing right now in the world that he invites us into. And I just love to watch that. And you and I kind of have this unique front row seat often as people transition in their seasons to see that. And there's a lot of really good examples in our church of how to do that really well, which is beautiful to watch. It is interesting, like going back to maybe a few minutes ago, you were talking about how we have this, I guess it's like an automatic response of how is your day or how's your week? I think a lot of us feel like we need to describe a fullness and a busyness. And part of me wonders if that is there, not just because you know, of our fear of human beings and what they might think of us. That's part of it. But I wonder if some of that's there because it's just in us. Like, we know that we are to be contributing to something, that we are to be participating in something. And that's not really that's not the way that God would design us to do that. Like, he doesn't, like that Psalm that I quoted of this like anxious toil, right? From morning to basically till evening, and then you drop, and then you don't sleep, and then you do it again. That's not what God designed us for. But I do think there's something in us that like wants to contribute. It wants to do what is good for the world. It often gets manifested, I think, in very selfish ways, you know, in ways about enriching ourselves or protecting our turf or whatever it is. But it does seem like that's in human beings, you know, to work and to do what is good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point, right? That we are, I think it is revealing that we know we are supposed to, that's a life of meaning. And so, but the life of meaning is not found in being seen as important by other people, or you're not going to get satisfied in the work, because it'll never, like I said, it'll never be enough. So I think when we say busy, we often answer questions based on how we know we should feel or what should be the case, not what's actually, you know, how we're feeling or, you know, like it's one of the reasons why we don't acknowledge sin a lot of times in our life, because we say, well, I know I'm not supposed to feel that way. So we kind of say what we want to be the truth. And so, we want to be seen as busy. We want to feel busy, but I think one of the reasons why we can't just, why we have to answer that way is because we do feel so insecure in what we've accomplished or what we do. I think we just feel like we probably should have been doing more. And so that's where the accuser, like where the enemy gets in there and accuses, like, well, you should be doing more. You should have accomplished more. Other people are doing more. And then yes, in our culture, then it's in that broken world, there can be a shaming, you know, if you you and I have faced it there, like there are people who, you know, they'll half jokingly say that we work one day a week, but we've talked about it before that most people don't have any idea what we actually do during a week or what our week actually looks like or how much time is spent or which hours are spent or whatever. And I think that's most jobs. I think, you know, how many times have you heard somebody say about a teacher, like, well, you get the summers off. And I always want to say, man, I want to always say this to my teacher friends who get the summers off. You just like, I mean, one, you could be snarky and just be like, yeah, imagine how hard those 9 months are that you need 3 whole months off. But also just embracing what is good and a beautiful gift, you know, about our jobs. I think that's one way to allow work to be redeemed, is to just do the job, do the work, be faithful in the work that you're given for that day, and don't feel like you have to apologize for what that work is. You don't feel like you need to, like, everybody's job has things that are more fun than other parts. Like, even if what's great about your job is when you go home from your job, nobody calls you about your job. Like, some people have a job like that.
Yeah,
some people.
Yeah. Or some people get paid every hour they work. Some people, so when they work more hours,
they get paid more.
Yeah. And
often at a higher rate than they get for the other.
And then other people don't. Isn't it interesting? Like, I think that you're making a really important point that when we both evaluate our work and then we, you know, I don't even know if evaluate's the best word to use for what often happens, but maybe judge another person's work. So I think maybe that's better. Yeah. But we have to acknowledge that we really don't know. Like, we really don't know what it's like to do that role, to do that life, to make that salary, to have those responsibilities, because we haven't done it, right? And usually we can do that in other areas where we just like, I don't know what it would be like. But I do think in work, and I think maybe here specifically, like in the area we live, we often do imagine that we can fill out the picture. This is what it would look like. But you're right. I mean, just like with our role here, it goes for anyone's role. We just don't really know what that looks like. You know, we might have a sense of, oh, if I had that schedule, I'd like that schedule. Yeah. But what about other things that go with it, right? And that we just don't realize. So I think that's a really good word for how we can relate with each other, is to one, just not feel like we have to justify ourselves, because that's part of it with work. We really do feel like that. I need to justify my work or the way I use my time to other people. And really, we're accountable to God for how we use our time. And I think brothers and sisters in Christ can be really helpful with that, you know, to give wisdom and perspective. But the impulse to, I don't know if that's the best word, Jay, to justify it, it just feels like it's there a lot when it comes to work.
And ultimately, that's with everything. Self-justification is exhausting. And trying to reframe the world and reframe our lives and reframe situations, that it's always at the root of so many things. It's why we're not quick to ask for forgiveness, because we have to somehow figure out a way that it, where we'll be the good guy, or that where what we did was understandable or what we did was excusable. We have to figure out a way to justify our existence. We do that sometimes in jobs where we make jobs harder. Like I just see this a lot, where we make the job harder than it needs to be because they're justifying our existence. You know, like we see that a lot in corporations. We see it in government, where jobs are created in order to do something, and then you have to like create the problem so that the reason for the job exists. So like we are always doing that kind of thing. But the freedom, when you think about creation, is really the idea about work and rest is just about faithfulness. Like the freedom is not found in trying to fill up my day to be as busy as possible and try to accomplish more and more and more. The freedom is found in knowing that just the act of working, like one, getting away from what we accomplish and more into the act of just faithfulness. So like yesterday when I went out to do the leaves, like the leaves had to be done. And so I could have been stressed out about that. And there was part of that, you know, just thinking, am I going to be able to get all this done? Which I want to mention that in a second too, but just go do it. Just go work as working unto the Lord and work, use the daylight hours. Then I came into the office and I worked on my message for next Sunday. And I, rather than getting folks focused or fixated on, oh, I have all this to accomplish, I just thought, okay, I just need to work on this. Now, why am I able to do that? You made the point. You asked the question. I wish you would have, there's one thing I wish about the Sunday on Sundays, that you would have lingered longer on this question, because I think it was so good that I wish that like people would have just sat in a little bit longer. But you asked the question of, do you believe that God has given you all the time that you need to accomplish what he has called you to accomplish? And the answer, like, see, now you and I are different personalities. I would have said, hey, raise your hand if you think that's true. And then I would have called the rest of the people liars, because they think it's not true. If they think it's, because we all at our core, we do not believe that.
No,
we do not believe that God gives us like what we think of. It's like with, we do this with resources, with money, with time, with anything. We operate with a scarcity mentality. And most of us, I would dare say all of us, if we actually confronted ourselves on this and said, do you believe that God has given you all the time that you need to do what he has called you to do? We would say, like, we live like no. We live like we don't believe that. That's why anxiety and stress comes in. Nobody gets stressed. If I said to you, hey, tomorrow I need you to drop stuff off at the post office before 4 o'clock. And because Peshtigo, it closes at 4, I think. They pick up at 4. I don't know. I'm not usually the one that goes to the post office, obviously. But if I said that's all you need to do tomorrow, here's these packages, nobody would feel overwhelmed by that. You'd say, okay, yep, I got plenty of time to do that. When we have plenty of time to do the work that we've been given, and we know we're capable of doing the work we've been given, then by definition, like that's not overwhelming, unless you feel like it's keeping you from doing something else, but that you really want to be doing. But that's when we get out of whack with work and rest. If we understood every day, if you just understood like, hey, my job today is to have this rhythm of work and rest. So I have work to do. and I'm going to work about 8 hours or 9 hours or 10 hours. If you count like, you know, other things at home, like I'm going to work for 8 hours at my livelihood job and then I'm going to do whatever. And I know we'll have people listening. And I'm like, well, my 8 hours, I wish my job was eight, whatever. Just hang in there with me. That just shows what I'm talking about. And your job in that is to just work as though working under the Lord. It doesn't matter what you actually end up accomplishing. It is to just do the best job you can, like be the best mechanic you can, be the best electrician you can be the best teacher you can be. Just do what, be faithful to the job that God has given you. And then you rest. Like if that's what our mindset was, then there wouldn't be, I mean, there's be hard things about it. There'd be frustration still. There'd still be difficulties like in the fall or whatever. But feeling busy and overwhelmed wouldn't be that. But instead, we go into most days feeling like we have more to accomplish than what the day has to offer. And I would just say that that is a fundamental thing that we just need to confront and say, well, then something's off. Either I am putting more on myself or on my plate than what I should be doing. You know, a lot of times those of us with ADHD are guilty of what's called the world peace list. I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase before.
No, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, so it's like you like, hey, make a to-do list. And that's awesome, except for if you're the type of person that then literally lists, because you have everything is in your brain at once, and you list everything, including world peace. Like, today I'm supposed to accomplish world peace. Well, that's not realistic. So sometimes we're driven because we just feel like we have more to do because we've put more things on us, or we've allowed other people to put things on us. And sometimes we feel that busyness and overwhelm because we want to reject the identity of work. And what we really want is just to work for a couple of hours and then do all the thing, like do leisure the rest of the time. But either way, that's what we end up, that's the environment we create for ourselves. And in doing that, then we end up, because we embrace that as truth, that, well, there's always more to accomplish than the day has hours. You're saying something about God. You're now making an accusation against God, and you are treating God, you're basically calling out God as this overbearing boss, this unrealistic boss, or this unrealistic parent who has just these otherworldly expectations for us, and that he is constantly disappointed in me because I never got enough done. Maybe I got six things. I made a list yesterday. I had 20 things on the list. I got 3 done. So it feels like, even though I worked so many hours like out on the air, but that's because one of the things was deal with the leaves and mow. And that took hours. And then another one on the list was get the first part of the sermon prep done. And that took me a couple of hours. And then like, so each thing that I happened to do were just, they were big chunks of time. And if I get to the end of that day and say, well, I feel shame or guilt or insufficiency because I didn't get everything done. Well, then what I'm doing is saying to God, God, you gave me too much. If my aim is, if I would really say my aim is to be faithful to God with my work, which I think everyone in our church would say that. This is why I'm saying, like, we say things that we don't actually believe. We say what we think would be the truth. Because if you asked everybody, hey, do you think this is a true statement? Your job today is to do what God has called you to do and be just faithful to what God has called you to do. We say, yeah, absolutely, I believe that. But our lives don't bear that out, because at the end of the day, we feel shame, guilt. We feel like we didn't do enough, or we feel like we missed out on the rest we're entitled to, or whatever. But all of it is an accusation against God saying, you gave me too much. You are overbearing. And now that either turns into resentment towards God or shame and guilt on myself, which is not good.
No, it's not. You know, I think part of this has massive implications for how we relate with each other too, relationally. You know, like I think for a lot of people, that feeling of like, I didn't get it all done is coming also from expectations that other people put on them. So it's both like we expect something of ourselves that God isn't, and other people expect things from us that are beyond. And so part of me, I mean, this to me is why these weeks in the beginning of Genesis are so important for us to really digest, to really make part of the operating system of our mind, that that when we think about ourselves. So if we approach work as a human, it really changes what we expect that that God gives us to do. If we approach work essentially as a God, well, what can God accomplish in a day? You know, it's beyond our expectations. So I think part of our issue is that we forget these foundational things about who we are, that we are limited creatures.
Yeah.
And that limit is a very good thing. And part of it is, I mean, it's an interesting, Jay, again, didn't have time for this either, but almost every single piece of new technology that's introduced into the world is introduced with the promise of making work easier or giving us more time. That's like almost without exception. And we all know there's a certain truth to that. So I am really thankful that there's a snowblower when we get a lot of snow in my garage. So that is, I'm really thankful for that, that I'm not having to, you know, use a stick to try to clear it. But there's also a truth in that because I have a snowblower, then I have an expectation that that's going to take this much less time. And so I can get this thing done too, and I can add to this. And that's what happens with every piece of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And increasingly today with you know, AI models and things that are developing, that if you listen to some of the people that are leading in these fields, the bleeding edge of technology, they're describing a utopian existence. And that utopian existence assumes that it's much better for us to not have to work. Okay. And we can accomplish an infinite number of things. And it's really like confusing what a human being is, you know, and that's part of why I think this is all so important. Like if I go into my day with the expectation that I'm a creature that God has given some things to do, and that I join him in participating in, and those things are human size. They're like, they're fit for me as a creature, not for God, right? Then it really does change. And then it helps us with our expectations of each other as well. You know, part of being a human is I'm forgetful.
Right.
Right? Part of being a human is sometimes the thing I really intend to do and I think it's going to take an hour takes four. That's just all creatureliness.
Right. So that's the point of like accomplishing. So look at what you said. Technology allows us, in theory, to accomplish infinite things, but do way less work.
Yeah.
But our calling is to work and rest, not to accomplish. And, you know, like it, accomplish is not the same thing as work, because most of the time, most of us work in jobs where we are not in control of the outcome. And so if we measure everything by what we accomplish, then there are jobs and worlds where you are measured by what you accomplish. And those are the highest stress jobs, you know, like, but the reality is we are called, because you can't be in control of what you accomplish. And the only way you can do that or have some semblance of that is to then overwork yourself, you know, to get out of rhythm. But if you're going to be in a healthy rhythm of work and rest, then you have to measure things based on your faithfulness and the work, not the accomplishment. And that's why technology fails us in those ways. It's because the reason we fill it up, the reason why now, because you have the snowblower, you also plan on doing something else around the house, is because you're wired to do the work. It's actually not a bad thing. And there is a gift in the technology, but the reality is, if you go back, we talk about like pioneer days. Nobody would ever say that pioneer days, that they are lazy, right? Like you had to survive, you had to do all this work to survive. And yet they had the same amount of time in the day. And their to-do list was always like one or two things. Like we need to eat and we need to stay warm, you know, like, so whatever it was around that, that's what you do all day. And now we mentioned before, it's the easiest thing. Like the things that for millennia, for the history of all humankind, the top of their to-do list was food, water, shelter, like warmth. That's like you have to, and for a huge chunk of human history, that was a daily to-do, and that would take your entire day. And now we turn on a faucet, we go to a grocery store or a fast food restaurant, right? And we turn on a thermostat. Like, if you would have told people 200 years ago, this is how easy it is going to take you 5 minutes to take care of all the food, shelter, and water that you need today, they'd be like, well, what do you do with the rest of your day? And like you said, the promise is, the idea is like, oh, it's the leisure. Like, then you don't do anything. But we won't ever do that because we're not wired for that. It's going against our personalities, which is why even when we have created leisure, what have we done with the world of leisure now? We've turned it into work. Mm-hmm. Like, leisure is not leisure anymore. If you go, like, anything that you do, I mean, again, think back to the pioneer days. On a Sunday afternoon at the church picnic or whatever, they'd take a ball out and they'd throw a ball around. Now it's like, no, we have to work so hard at our leisure. Why? Because we're wired to work. We really are. And we don't feel like, nobody just sits there and says, oh, I was able to send an email or a text really quick, rather than in the old days, I'd have to like go get stationery and write out a handwritten letter and then, you know, put a stamp on it and go take it to the post office. Well, what do I do with that extra 45 minutes or an hour? I send another text or another email. And I would just say, that's not a bad thing, but we need to stop believing that technology is going, like, we need to stop, like, it all comes back to, if you're pursuing accomplishing and you're pursuing leisure, like, if that's what you're, that's what you find your hope and your identity, and that's way out of whack, and it will only create more stress and more slavery is all that it is. Like, you become a slave to accomplishing things and to resting in things. So you buy more things to try to find more rest, and you just, like, it is a mess. And the only way to get out of that is to buy into the rhythms that God has given us and to say, okay, and maybe we could talk about that a little bit, like the daily, weekly, yearly rhythms that we just say, all right, I'm going to give myself over to these, and I'm not going to buy into what the world says my rhythm should be.
Yeah, that's really good. It makes me think too, how, you know, as a follower of Jesus, my call, you know, one of the things I'm called to out of faithfulness to Christ is to love my neighbor as I love myself. And it makes me think too, so are the choices we need to make to keep in rhythm, to keep faithful to him, but also the choices we can make to love each other into those rhythms as much as we can. Like, I'm not in control of yours, but there are certain things I can do to love you that would enable you to do that. It doesn't cause it, right? But like, so for example, I'm just thinking, knowing what we know about the way technology impacts, like the devices impact our ability to really rest, and assuming that if it's possible, like in some families it's not, but in some seasons it's not, but assuming it's possible to take an hour together around a table, a few times a week at least, say that's part of what rest could look like with your family, and the people that you love, then one of the way I want to love you is by not, like, by being thoughtful even about the way I use technology to get at you, like to reach you. So like, maybe I think to myself, you know what, it's 5:15, it's 6 o'clock. I'm not going to text him right now. Because if I'm him, I'm probably thinking, I probably want to be with my kids and my family and have dinner. And yeah, he might be disciplined enough to have the phone in a different room. But if he's not, I just don't want to add to that. So like, that's what I mean. Like, I think part of it is we as a church can be creative with the way we love each other. And it doesn't mean there's never a time when I can text you at 6 o'clock. These aren't laws. That's the problem. Laws can't solve it. But creative love and knowing each other and knowing some of the rhythms do. So like, typically people don't call me at three in the morning, for example, right? Unless there's an emergency, because they assume I need to sleep. I think just like we already assume that about each other, we need to assume part of our work and rest rhythm is that we need some intentional time of rest where we're not on a device. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to try when I can to not do that. And then my expectation of your response when we relate pixel to pixel is going to be reasonable. And, you know, these are just like maybe way too obvious, but I do think they're basic ways that we can love each other and help each other in this. So I'm not going to say, send another question mark after it's been an hour and a half to my question, right? Because, and this is what happens.
Just so everybody knows, this is not Jeff's veiled critique of me.
Right no, now. It's not. It's just.
It sounds so funny.
This is the experience.
This is a hypothetical situation. You know, like if the guy, you know, guy that you work with texts you and then sends you.
No, I don't even think it's hypothetical. I think this is.
No, I know, but I'm just saying this is funny. If someone's listening to this, I would. If I was listening to this, I would be like, "Oh my gosh, Jeff's calling Jay out right now." Just for the record, I don't do that. I've never sent.
He doesn't. I do think this is just our common experience today, though.
It is.
The number of times that I'm with people.
Yes.
Like we're watching a basketball game or something.
Yes.
And their phone's blowing up the whole time. I'm like, man, that's such a bummer for them. And so that's what I'm getting at. Like, I think it, for us to make the healthy choices in faithfulness to Jesus, it requires, yes, I have to make the commitment faithfully and my family does. And then it's really helpful if others in community with me also make that commitment because we are all interrelated with this, right? And it changes how it feels if you know the person on the other side realizes right now I'm doing this thing and I'll get to them in a human way when I'm able to, because I can't actually multitask right now. I think that's part of it, the expectations that we have for each other. But yeah, getting really practical too, just on daily rhythms, Jay.
Wait, can I,
go
say
ahead.
Something about that?
Yeah,
and then I want you to get it practical. But yeah. I think that it is a really important point. And I think we talked about this last year. I think it's one of the reasons why I don't go shopping on Thanksgiving Day. Like I won't go to the store, and I'm not saying other people should. I get it's just the culture that we're in, but it's the reality that there was a time, like in our country, for example, where stores were just closed on Sundays. They just weren't open and practices weren't scheduled on Sundays. And it's so funny to me when people talk about like how, you know, we kicked God out of the schools and all this stuff. And I'm always like, no, you can't do that. Well, one thing though is, we did as Christians kind of give up. We did not protect our neighbors well. That's where we should have put our energy, would have been protecting Sundays, for example. And just imagine what our culture would be like if nobody had to work on Sundays. If everybody got a day of rest, whether they use that day of rest to go to church or not or whatever, but it's because of our need for more, our belief, our buying into technology, our buying into kind of instant gratification, all that stuff that we need. It drives me crazy that our packages get delivered on Sundays now. And so when I order something from Amazon, one nice thing is that it does give you a choice of do you want it to be delivered as fast as possible, or they'll call it like on Amazon Day or whatever. I always click off of Sunday. That's just one little act of, you know, I do not want to be the reason why someone has to deliver a package on Sunday. And that's not a hard cut, but it's just it is a way of loving each other, these expectations, communication, you're right, like texting, devices. You hit on devices, and I think that's so critical. Like one thing we just need to understand is that those devices there's no rest in them. We used to kind of measure that and say like, oh, well, you can use it for the, no, they're not rest ever. Even if you're playing a game on it, that's not actually restful. That's actually ends up being, there's a work element to that. But whatever it is, even if you're saying like, well, I have an app that plays thunderstorms or whatever, like, okay, but that device also, you know, it'd be kind of like having a dog that bites you all the time, but when he's asleep, he's really nice to pet. Are you really relaxed when you're petting a dog that you know if they wake up at any second, they're going to bite you? Like, it's not really that restful. It's not that relaxing. I think that metaphor actually works a little bit. So like, even if you're doing something that feels like, oh, I'm listening to this thing, but then it vibrates, you know, or it beeps. Or it also has this thing on it that pulls your attention. It also, it's always sitting there. You're never fully engaged with that. So like, I think that communal thing of, in what you said about the texting, I don't think we know how to deal with texting. Honestly, texting is the devil. And I do a ton of texting. Like that's how I communicate. But it's because of that. Email, when we had email, it was understood before you could have it on your phone, it's like, oh, well, it was like a letter. It was much more of a parallel that when you're in this space, But imagine like if you could send letters back in ye olden days and it would just immediately get delivered to somebody. Now you're expecting them to open that letter, whatever they're doing. They're at work, they're wherever. They have to open that letter, read it, and now they got to respond to it. That it would be nuts. You'd never do that. Or imagine like, you know, would I call you? Just, I think that's such a great example of, it's a good reference to say, if I wouldn't call them right now, I shouldn't text them right now. So that maybe that's just one good rule of thumb to kind of just throw out to yourself of saying like, text should be like a less, it should be the thing that you say, okay, if I would call them, then I can text them. And then like you said, like understanding reasonable timelines of response and all that, but it is cultural, and which is why then having the devices on us is so dangerous, because now I feel like I should, and I don't want to disappoint this person. I don't want to let them down, and I feel like I should, you know, and you have to kind of push back against that, and we can do that communally. So sorry, I just really, you making that communal point and then texting and all that, it all hit in a certain way to me, of just saying we can do that together.
Mm-hmm. That's why this is so important. And I think why, you know, we are uniquely positioned by Jesus to go after it, because we can do it together in a way that's not just individuals, a bunch of independent, disconnected people right. doing it. And it doesn't mean, I mean, the slippery slope with that is that you blame others for your lack of rest. That's not it. But we can love each other into that in a way that's really helpful. You know, when it comes to the daily rhythm, the one that for me has been probably the most helpful is the one I just really quickly unpacked on Sunday, where my relationship with my phone, I want it to be a tool and not a companion, which means I don't need it for anything right when I wake up in the morning, because it's a tool for things I'm not doing right when I wake up in the morning. Okay. So for me, again, I think this is important to say, these are not laws, right? Because everyone's situation is different, but there are principles. So for me, I have made the choice that I'm not going to interact with that thing, with that device. I'm not going to pick it up and to use it until I've actually woken up and I've had time to adjust myself to the reality that I'm in God's presence. And for me, that means I've opened up the Word, I've done a little reading, I've done some praying, and then after that, and I'm ready to get going with my day, I will pick it up, because it's the tool then I use to accomplish the things that God's given me to do. But I would say even just that discipline, and it's not one that's like, it's tens and ones, you know, like it's not every day that I pull it off, because some days something comes in, I'm like, I got to deal with this. Or we forgot to, you know, refill a lunch balance or whatever. Stuff happens right away. But that's the principle I'm trying to live by, or the guidance that I've given myself. And that's been really fruitful. And so I guess one thing I would encourage people to do, and this requires some rest to do this, by the way. That's one of the reasons rest is so important. The way that Jesus has called us to live requires reflection, and it requires focus. It requires some intentional thoughtfulness. It's really hard to do that when we're frantic or we're always working on something. But just some reflective, prayerful time about life. And where is that pocket for you that you feel like, I need to put up some guardrails for myself and some ways that I'm going to live, that I don't put my hope in those ways, but they can be tools and aspects where I'm just carving out some space that I really am going to trust that Jesus is going to use that space to help me rest in a way that I need, to help me connect with him and to be attentive to his presence and attentive to his voice and his word. And I want to be praying for people in my life that I love. And that needs, I need some time to do that. I need some space where I can be thinking about people, you know, who aren't with me. And so, yeah, that's just one real practical thing for me that I would commend, because I don't feel like it's too challenging. It really hasn't been for me. I just have had to adjust how I keep track, because oftentimes I'll use my phone to keep track of time. So for me, it's meant not using my phone for that in the morning. So there's adjustment there, but the discipline of it has kept me from doing things that make me feel actually kind of anxious too. So like if the first thing you're doing is reading about the catastrophes of the night before on the news or something, it's just it's not the best way to start. Again, that's, if you were God, you could handle it, but you're not, you're human. And so we start in the ways that he has given us to. And for me, that means I want to be with him. And again, I'm not talking hours. It can be 20 minutes for me, and that makes a huge difference for then what happens the next hour and then the hour after that for my day. Jay, for you, you know, you hinted at another one earlier with phones and the table, things like that. But what are some other just practicals that maybe people could consider to help reimagine? Imagine, yeah. We're talking about rest right now, but it includes work. It affects how you work.
So I try to think of rhythms, and the rhythm that I think of is prep, work, rest. So like you said, the beginning of my day is I'm preparing for work. Now that might mean, so I want to think about, well, what do I prepare? How do I prepare myself best for a day? Well, it's going to include prayer. It's going to include scripture. It should include exercise. There are seasons where that includes moving or whatever, but also some silence. And so I typically start my day, like this morning, I don't have my phone. I do have my watch on, but I don't have my phone with me. I don't have my computer or anything. And I just sit and I just read and pray. And like you said, sometimes that's like this morning, it actually turned into close to an hour. Sometimes it's 10 minutes. I think a helpful thing in that prep time is for me, my brain just starts going wild. And so a helpful thing would be to bring something that I can write on, like, you know, a piece of paper, a notebook and a pen. It's not meant to be a long-term storage thing, but it's just I can jot down like, oh yeah, I need to do this and just get it out of my head so that I'm not trying to juggle all those things in my head. And then when I go to work, you know, for me especially, that's been a really important rhythm for me of like blocking the day in, like, you know, so different people have different jobs. Sometimes you go to a job and they tell you like, this is what you're doing today. And this is, you know, like, okay. But whatever it is, I want to be prepped to do that. And then when I'm working, I measure faithfulness, not productivity. So I just think, okay, if I have to work on the message, you know, on my sermon or something, then I need to just, I just need to spend the time doing this and thinking about this and working on it. And sometimes it's really fruitful. Like I've written entire sermons in less than an hour, and there have been sermons that have taken me 20 some hours to write. And I think everybody has there are things, even if you're working on a factory line and, you have a quota of how much you're supposed to produce. Well, if the machine breaks, you all of a sudden can't do that. And so just releasing that. So that kind of rhythm of just being reminded as I'm going through my work that my job right now is to be faithful. It's not to get overwhelmed or to get frustrated or to procrastinate or to do whatever. It's just to, like, I'm going to be faithful. And then rest means there comes a point where I need to turn that off. And, you know, we've talked about before that one of the things about smartphones and technology promised us, oh, well, now you can work from anywhere. So if you have a job that you can do from anywhere, you know, like, you know, I think about teachers. Teachers used to have to take, like, they take their papers home to grade them or whatever. But now with laptops and everything, they can literally take their whole classroom basically home. And they're responding. Like, we'll send emails and they'll be responding at like 10 o'clock at night. And it makes me cringe. So there does need to be a time where you turn that off. And you, again, you're talking about communally having that responsibility for each other. You know, as pastors, we don't want to turn our phone completely off because there could be emergencies. So that's the tension, is that, you know, but you do have to have this, that's a different tangent, but you have to have like this daily time where you say, I'm turning this off now. Like I'm quote unquote off the clock. And now my rest is going to be present with my family, with my friends, with the Lord, like just having that rest in that daily rhythm of that. So I don't know if that's helpful. I would say like the most practical stuff in there is like pen and paper. What we've also done as far as devices go is I try to take inventory of what do I want to be accomplishing. So when you talk about it being a tool, part of the problem with technology is they it convinces you, you need to be doing something that you never thought about doing. So like it's not actually solving a problem you're aware of. It's telling you about a problem you didn't even know was a problem. Now, sometimes that can be a good thing. Sometimes we need to have things brought to our attention, but most often it's like, well, you didn't ever need to worry about that. That really wasn't an issue. That wasn't a problem. Now you have a new problem that you need this thing to solve. So in other words, like think about on your phone, what do you actually need? Like what are you actually trying to accomplish? And maybe like I have friends who have dumb phones because they've determined literally all they need to do. They have a calendar on their computer. They don't need it on their phone. They don't need any of those things on their phone. They might, you know, sometimes getting single use devices is helpful. So get a GPS device. They still make GPS devices. Get that for your car if you want to have maps. I'm not saying don't use your phone for it, but I'm just saying you can start to see like, oh, I don't need, I don't need all these other things. Like what I need this device for is X, Y, and Z. So I want to try to, as best as I can, I want to have a device that only does X, Y, and Z. So that can be a practical thing when it comes to rest. But ultimately, I think that the rhythm of just trying to get into that daily rhythm of saying it is good that I prepare for my day, it is good that I work, and it is good that I then rest at the end of the day. And then I would say weekly saying like, okay, but it's also good that I take a significant amount of time, like a day to just to rest, which we've talked about Sabbath before. They can go back and listen to messages that we have on taking a Sabbath. But yeah, it feels like there's just so much. So then I just end up going down a rabbit trail or whatever. And then I don't know that it's very helpful.
Well, I mean, there is so much. I think that the list of topics related to work and rest, because this is so central to who God made us to be. He made us to work. He made us to rest. It is so foundational. It's an endless list. But I guess my encouragement to people would be, one of the things I said on Sunday, and we say this all the time, is it may be that the real small thing is the thing that's going to make the huge difference right now. So whatever the small adjustment, rather than like thinking, you know, I've got to make this perfect now, I would just say make a small adjustment that you know is good and then make another one. But just start with one thing. And whether it's any of the things we talked about or something else that God's bringing to mind, I mean, we trust that His Spirit knows how to lead us. Make that adjustment and do it in faithfulness to Him. And then involve other people in your life who you love in that project with you, whether it's reclaiming some rest or whether it's working in a new way and for a new reason, whatever it would be. I mean, I heard after the sermon all kinds of ways that people were sensing like, I need to change this. And I would just encourage people, don't let that opportunity that I really think that is from God, don't let it pass by. Make the small change that He's calling you to. If He's calling you to a big one, make that. But I would just say for many of us, we just think of the whole big list and it feels paralyzing. What do I do? Well, just start with one thing and then ask Him again, now what else do I do, God? And He will lead you. He will guide you in that. And as always, we would love to talk. If you feel like any of the things we're unpacking here that are so foundational to what it means to be a human, if you want to talk, we would love to talk or connect you with someone who we think would be more helpful than us to talk about it. So let us know, reach out, and we'd love to walk with you in it, because these rhythms, you know, we focused a lot on how it affects us, but what's at stake is much bigger. It's not just about us and our comfort. It's about our witness in the world and the kingdom of God. And these are ways in which He's given us to really be distinct, right? To be set apart for His purposes. So there's bigger things, and that's where we're headed this next week, which I'm really excited about, with God's call on our lives.
Yeah, we'll get to talk about God's mission. I think the where I would land from your sermon and from this conversation is just the promise that work rest rhythm can be really meaningful and fruitful and joyful. And so that is possible, and it is so much about perspective. And so I would think about those rhythms of prep, work, rest, and just be reminded that we are designed and wired to do all those things. And so whatever we want to avoid, some people try to avoid work. Some people try to avoid rest. And they say, well, I just can't sit still. Like whatever you say, I just can't, whatever, fill in the blank, maybe try to start doing that, you know, in small ways. But I digress. Some people want to avoid work through procrastination or trying to get it over or wishing they didn't have to go. That's in a way avoid. Like some people go to work every day, but they wish they didn't have to. You're avoiding engaging in work. So even if you do the work, you're still avoiding it. And some people avoid rest. Everybody avoids prep. Like nobody, if you're wired to like get things done, then prep feels like, you know, slow and like not doing the thing. Like I'm awake, I should be accomplishing something. And so you have to give that up to say, no, this is an important part of this. And people who try to avoid work and they just want to, like they're more wired to just want to go do whatever they want to do, then that seems hard. Like prep seems hard. Like I either have to get up a little bit earlier or I have to, like I'm going to read and I don't really like to read, or I'm going to like sit in silence and I don't really like sitting in silence. I like to have something going on, all those different things. But if people will trust and just jump into those rhythms, and like you said, in small ways, like even by acknowledging it tomorrow, acknowledging those rhythms, and starting, even if it's a minute at a time, you can actually see some really incredible things happen. And like Jeff said, you know, we want to help with that, and other people can help with that, and you can get ideas from other people. You know, maybe this is where life stage stuff can really matter, or people who've gone through your life stage. I love that you mentioned people that have young kids. Like they're just, sometimes you're in rhythms, which we didn't get to talk about yearly rhythms, but not everything is supposed to be uniform every single day. God didn't even create it that way. You talked about at the very beginning, we have 9.5 hours of daylight. Mm-hmm. Well, back in the days before electricity, that meant that 9.5 hours of any kind of work. People slept way longer before electricity in the winter, and they slept less in the summer. But there are yearly rhythms. It doesn't need to look the same every single day. But if you can just think of what does prep look like today, what does work look like today, and what does rest look like today, and how do I actively engage in that intentionally? Maybe intentionally is the good word for that. And how do I encourage others around me to do the same? And as we do that more and more, imagine the kind of impact we could have on the culture around us if we just all did that. So yeah, a lot to talk about here, a lot of stuff we could have gone down the road with, but as always, if you have questions, let us know. You can email us at connect@faithpastorgo.com or talk to us on a Sunday. We'd love to hear how God is forming you in this way. We hope that it has been helpful. As always, we thank you for taking the time to listen. Until next time, grace and peace.